Great. Thank you. Mr. Morrison, you may proceed.
Thank you, Judge. May it please the court, my name is John Morrison. I'm counsel for the appellant and plaintiff below, Mark Biegler. I'd like to reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. This is a negligence case against a managing general agent for failure to exercise reasonable care in the placement of surplus lines insurance coverage. GMI placed primary liability and property damage coverage with a company that was unwilling to provide primary coverage. When claims came in and the insurer discovered it was primary, it canceled the coverage midterm. GMI's negligence created a fiasco for Biegler's anchor client, and consequently, he lost their business. There was indisputably confusion that led to the cancellation of coverage here. The complaint alleges that the confusion was caused by the negligence of GMI and asserted 4 well-pled negligence claims. The district court concluded that all of these claims failed because the policy did, in fact, provide primary coverage. Biegler respectfully submits that the duties of GMI were broader than that, and that the 12B6 dismissal should therefore be reversed. The complaint alleges several negligence claims against GMI. 1, general negligence, failure to place coverage that was, quote, acceptable to, end quote, both the insured and the insurer, and failure to exercise reasonable care in communicating the nature of the coverage to the carrier. That's count 1 in paragraphs 29 and 30 at ER 30. 2, negligent misrepresentation. That is supplying Biegler with false information that USMC, United Specialty, was willing to, quote, willing to, end quote, provide primary coverage when they were not. That's count 3, negligent misrepresentation, paragraph 38. 3, breach of the duty to procure the coverage requested. And in this case, that consists of failing to place the coverage with a carrier that was willing to cover the risk. That's count 4, paragraph 43. 4, negligent performance of a duty voluntarily undertaken. That is the duty the GMI representative, Amy Phillips, undertook specifically to place the primary coverage with a willing carrier and to meet the coverage needs of Fleet Logics.
Counsel, can you explain a little bit what your client's theory is of exactly what happened here? Because I'm having a little trouble understanding how an insurance company can provide, you know, can become a party to a contract in which they're providing insurance, but they don't understand what kind of insurance it is that they're providing. So what's your story of how this came about?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, I think the nuances of the facts in this case are still unknown to us because we don't know everything that happened behind the curtain. But the complaint alleges substantive facts, including statements made by the owner of the managing general agent USMC to my client, that he was misled by Amy Phillips at GMI. And so we have alleged several facts on which to base the claim that the reason the insurance company didn't know what it was getting into was because of negligence of GMI in its representations to USMC and United Specialty. United Specialty is the surplus lines carrier, but USMC is their managing general agent and had the pen, as they say in the insurance business. And so my client, backing up to the beginning of the facts, my client had an insurance agency and Fleet Logics was a client, and they were covered by Liberty Mutual in the admitted market. And my client sold his business to Hub At the same time, Liberty decided to non-renew this client, the client's Fleet Logics. Fleet Logics is in the business of preparing rental cars to be rented again. So they contract with Hertz and Avis and so forth. So my client started a new insurance agency, and Fleet Logics did not like the service that they were getting at Hub. And so they went to another company called Crystal. And Crystal went into the surplus lines market, and they got a bid from Republic Vanguard, which was a company. And then they came back to, they didn't like that person very well either. So they came back to Mark Beagler, who they had been with before, and they said, Mark, we're really comfortable working with you. And if you can place this coverage and get us a better deal, then you'll get the business back. So Mark and his new insurance firm goes to market looking for that coverage. He works with several colleagues and finds his way to Amy Phillips at GMI. Amy Phillips then says to him, I can meet Fleet Logic's coverage needs for you and the pricing needs. They put the package together. They go back and forth in March of 2018 for several months, talking about the details and the endorsements, the self-insured retention, which is essentially like a deductible. They agree upon all of these things, and they get the coverage issued. When the claims start coming in, they are turned in by Beagler to Amy Phillips at GMI, who turns them into USMC, and USMC says, we're not primary. And Amy Phillips says to Mark Beagler, oh, USMC says they're not primary. Beagler says, yes, they are primary. She says, we'll talk to USMC. So he then talked to the owner. First, he talked to the lawyer for USMC, John Kolb. And then Kolb said, we'll talk to our owner, Ed Murphy. So he gets on the phone with Ed Murphy and goes through it. Ed Murphy says, well, Amy Phillips misled us. I guess we'll stay on the coverage for now and see how it goes. And then a couple of weeks later, they precipitously canceled, and that's when the fiasco happened.
But is that theory really plausible? Because the policy itself says it's primary. The premium paid was very high, indicating or suggesting that it was a primary policy. So, I mean, you know, I empathize with your client's plight, but it seems like really the bad actor, at least according to the allegations, is the insurance company. The insurance company issued a primary policy, received money for a primary policy, and now it's trying to shirk its obligations. So, I mean, I don't doubt that it seemed like you got wrong, but I just don't see how, you know, there's a plausible theory that GMI is the one that was negligent here. It seems like it's an overt bad act by the insurance company.
Your Honor, we are proceeding against USMC and United Specialty in Delaware rather than challenge the personal jurisdiction issue. Was dismissed by the trial court without prejudice. So we refiled in Delaware, and we're pursuing that there. But the duties of USMC and United Specialty, whether they were breached or not, are not exclusive of the fact that GMI clearly has legal duties under Montana law, and it does not sufficiently answer those legal questions to say that primary coverage was in fact placed. Montana law recognizes that when you are doing business in Montana, as GMI was, and GMI is a licensed carrier in a licensed agent in Montana, as well as doing business on an extended negotiation with a Montana representative. Although these most of these causes of action are also recognized in Pennsylvania, where GMI is based, and many other states. But GMI had duties. A managing general agent has duties. Now, let's just say, hypothetically, we get to a point in the USMC United Specialty case where they say, we think USMC and United Specialty is not liable because they were misled by an independent managing general agent, Amy Phillips at GMI. At that point, if GMI has been released from the case, then my client has no remedy at all. And so that's just one example of why it's important to hold GMI to its duties. But beyond that,
to be clear about, there's a written document, right? That's the policy that's signed by somebody at USMC, maybe Murphy, or I assume someone at USMC must have signed the policy that they agreed to it. And your, was that document written by GMI? Like who actually drafted the document that USMC signed when they agreed to provide coverage?
Well, so the document is, I mean, the documents are probably written by ISO, the Insurance Services Office, you know, but they're assembled by various insurance people. And that's one of the things we haven't had a chance through discovery to explore yet.
Okay.
But you have a commercial general liability policy here, and then you have a hired non-owned auto endorsement that goes on that, which is the key endorsement that covers the liability for accidents that happens while they're doing what they do with the rental cars. Then they have a primary non-contributory endorsement that says, that's the one that says that if you're required to have primary coverage in your contract with Hertz and Avis, then this is primary coverage, which was true. And then there's a self-insured retention endorsement, which specifies that the coverage attaches at the $10,000 SIR point. And who cobbled together these different documents into the policy package is something that we haven't had a chance to explore yet.
Judge? I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
Your theory is that somebody at GMI put together something that provides for primary coverage and told USMC this is secondary coverage, and then USMC presumably agreed to that, signed it without actually reading the document. Is that essentially what you think must have happened? I mean, I'm having trouble seeing how this could have come about consistent with your view, other than USMC just not reading what the policy actually
is. I think a fact finder could conclude that the way this CGL policy was stuck together with these various endorsements, combined with representations by GMI that USMC says they made, created a kind of a confusion for USMC that led them reasonably to think that they were excess.
Counsel, which way does it cut the fact that United actually paid for a year? They accepted the liability for a year. What are we to infer from that, or to deduce from that as a matter of law?
Well, first of all, Your Honor, they did not accept liability for a year. They paid claims for about 2 months. And they were bound to pay those claims because they were on the paper, and the paper provided the coverage. But what they did was they precipitously canceled. They initially told my client, well, I guess you're right, we'll stay on this. But then 2 weeks later, they issued a 10-day notice, which was not a lawful notice, but nonetheless, it was then amended to a 20-day and then a 30-day, but in July, so this was bound in at the end of April, and in July they canceled. And so that created chaos.
But in terms of your claim against GMI, what are we to make of the fact that United, in fact, did pay those claims on the assumption, at least at that time, it was a primary policy?
The damage to my client did not come from non-payment of claims. The damage to my client came from a precipitous midterm cancellation that was, as we allege in our complaint, the consequence of GMI's negligence in the transaction. The duties of GMI are recognized in multiple cases in Montana. Montana recognizes that there's a general professional negligence standard of care. I noticed that I'm down to 25 seconds, and so I better stop at this time to reserve time for rebuttal, Your Honors.
Okay. Thank you, and we'll hear from Mr. Carafelli now.
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court. My name is Andrew Carafelli, appearing on behalf of GMINA. Just going back to Judge Miller's question about who actually put or cobbled these documents together, I would note that we are here today on a ruling on a motion, a 12B6 motion, based on the pleadings or the allegations contained in the complaint. Nowhere did the plaintiff ever allege that GMI had actually drafted the insurance documents or parts of the insurance policy. In fact, it is the underwriter, USMC, who puts those documents together. GMI has no role in those documents whatsoever. In fact, that's why the claims were turned over to the underwriter, because they are the ones who prepared the policy and then had to make the decision whether their policy, in fact, covered those claims once they came in. Obviously, what the district court did here was look at a long series of convoluted and contradictory set of allegations and distilled them down to their bare essence. And once done so, and applying the applicable Montana law, correctly concluded that the plaintiff had not stated a claim for relief against GMI for either negligence or misrepresentation. And the facts are very simple here. You know, the plaintiff himself admits that he reviewed the policy, confirmed that it was a primary policy. And in fact, as Judge O'Scanlan points out, USMC paid as a primary provider on the claims that came in. Plaintiff also, if he had reviewed the policy, knew that there was a cancellation or midterm cancellation provision in that policy. And plaintiff sat here today indicating or attempting to allude that this cancellation was somehow improper. Well, the fact is that cancellation policy appears in the policy. It was given proper notice. There's been no allegation here that there was improper notice given, nothing like that in the complaint. But in the reply brief, the appellant alluded to the fact that this was somehow this, what he's deemed a precipitous cancellation was somehow in violation of statutory law. And he cites to the California Insurance Code Section 660 in his reply brief. What the appellant didn't do was apprise this court that there's in fact a definition section, the California Insurance Code 660, which makes it clear that this California Insurance Code is not applicable to this situation whatsoever. In fact, the definition section 660 little A, 2 capital B says that this does not apply to any of the following, any policy insuring more than 4 automobiles. This was a rental fleet policy that we're talking about here. So thus, that code does not even apply here whatsoever. And the gravamen or thrust of plaintiff's appeal here today really is that cancellation. And again, the problem with this argument is that, one, it was provided for in the policy. Plaintiff was well aware of that when he read it. He didn't take issue with it at that time and concedes that the policy provided everything that he and his client had asked for. Two, there's no allegation here that GMI in any way either participated or told USMC to cancel the policy. For whatever reason they did, they were not involved in that decision. Instead, the argument that the appellant is trying to make here today is he wants to assess some type of a duty against GMI, basically that it failed to procure a, quote, willing carrier. This is repeated throughout the briefing in this matter. The problem with this is he concedes in his reply brief that Montana does not recognize any such standard of care for insurance agents or brokers. Moreover, he doesn't cite to any jurisdiction which has ever, ever recognized any such duty of care. In essence, what the appellant is asking this court to do today is to create new law or a new standard of care in the area of insurance law against insurance agents and brokers. We have to ask ourselves, what does that duty even mean? What is?
I understood his claim to be, at least in part, that the policy was only issued the way it was because GMI somehow misled USMC, sort of essentially tricked them into issuing the policy. And that it seems kind of far-fetched, but paragraph 20 of the complaint says, you know, Murphy said USMC told Phillips that, Murphy said he was misled by Phillips at GMI, that she had told USMC there was other coverage. So if we accept that as true, as I think we have to on a motion to dismiss, is it your view that that would not violate any duty under Montana law, if that's really what happened?
Well, the question would become, where does that duty flow? I would submit if that were in fact the case, Fleet Logic, or USMC rather, might have a claim against GMI for misleading it and making it pay out on primary claims or for purposes that didn't have to ultimately. Beigler here doesn't have a claim for that. He has no privity to that contract. It would be USMC's claim against GMI at that point in time.
And there, I mean, I guess the primary, I mean, certainly on those facts, USMC would have a claim, but maybe I'm just repeating the question, but you don't think there's any, there's no duty that's violated when, you know, GMI is supposed to be, you know, procuring insurance on behalf of Beigler, and they come back and they say, look, we got you this policy, but they don't say, you know, we only got you the policy by tricking the insurance company into issuing it. I mean, it seems like they're violating a duty that they owe to Beigler in that scenario, aren't they?
Well, this goes back to, again, the appellant looking for this court to create some kind of a new duty to provide a willing carrier. Which again is not recognized in any jurisdiction in this country. Again, this would lead down the slippery slope, if you will. Where would that argument even stop then? If Beigler has a claim based on something that GMI supposedly told a USMC to issue a policy. And again, even going back again, we know the policy was a primary policy and they paid out, you know, as a primary basis on those claims. So again, we go back to the cancellation is what they were really talking about here, which USMC clearly had a right to do under the policy and under the law at this juncture. You know, a willing carrier under appellant's argument then, any time a carrier, let's say, for example, refused to renew a policy, then somebody could make a claim saying, oh, well, they weren't a willing carrier. I have a claim for negligence for whatever reason, because they procured a carrier who didn't renew. Same here, somebody who canceled midterm, even though they were obligated or legally entitled to do so, they could bring them a claim. You could take that argument even steps further and say if an insurance company denied a claim based on liability, then somebody like Bigler would say, oh, well, my client doesn't like that, so now I'm going to sue you for negligence because you obtained this insurance policy and they're not a willing carrier. That's the problem with this argument is that, one, again, it's not recognized under the law, and I think the lower court recognized that. He recognized that what Bigler's trying to do is bootstrap these other claims that USMC might have against GMI to support his negligence claim. But again, there's no recognized duty between GMI and Bigler at this point in time, period.
Can we, Beigler proceed on a more narrow theory? I find it implausible that GMI would intentionally mislead the insurer. I just don't find plausible at all. But is it possible to have a claim if both GMI and the insurers committed negligence? That is, GMI maybe perhaps misspoke and said it was an excess coverage, even though it was a primary. And maybe the insurance company accepted that at face value, the person, and didn't check the policy and committed error. I mean, is that possible to have a more narrow negligence claim than maybe GMI misspoke here, even though clearly the policy here is a primary one, and you know, the insurer also believed due to its own negligence that it had subscribed to an excess coverage?
I don't see any type of claim that Beigler would still have if that's what in fact occurred. What Beigler's arguing is the speculative type of claim that, well, Fleet Logic, you know, didn't like the fact that they lost the coverage and therefore I suffered injuries because of that. Again, there's no recognized duty in that regard that would give Biegler such a claim. You know, this isn't a situation where GMI, you know, knew that USMC was insolvent or was, you know, one of these companies that never paid claims or anything along those regard, in that regard. So again, you're asking a broker like GMI to have a crystal ball and knowing what USMC might do at any given point in time. And again, that's simply not the law. And I don't know how Biegler would have a claim again, even if GMI misspoke somehow, because again, USMC wrote the policy ultimately on this. They knew what they were writing. They recognized it, you know, when they decided to pay out claims. So at this point in time, unless the court has any further questions, we would just ask to submit the case on briefs and would waive our remaining time and ask this court to affirm the lower court.
Thank you. Mr. Morrison?
Yes, Your Honor. I don't have very much time here for rebuttal, but I want to get right to the point that these statements, without the benefit of authority, that there is no basis in law for the duties we assert is simply incorrect. And our briefs cite that authority. In Delaney, the Montana Supreme Court said that in a case against an insurance agent, an expert witness can be used to establish the degree of prudence, attention, and caution the defendant must exercise in the selection of the carrier. In Al's Cafe in Pennsylvania, which we cited, consistent with Appleman and Couch, a duty to pick an appropriate carrier. That is a law recognized in, a duty recognized in many jurisdictions. In the Fillinger case in Montana, there is a specific recognition that the negligent misrepresentation cause of action extends to insurance agents. And so these duties are recognized, and they are recognized as flowing to anyone who is a foreseeable injured party. And so all of this is in our briefs. The duties are well established, the duty to procure and the duty voluntarily undertaken as well. All of those are supported by facts here, and they are not satisfied simply because this coverage wound up being primary. They said they were going to give us an insurance company that would meet our needs, and they didn't. They gave us an insurance company that did not want to meet our needs, and that does not satisfy their duties.
Thank you, counsel. Thank both counsel for their helpful arguments today. And the case just argued is submitted, and that concludes our calendar for today, and we are in recess.
Thank you, Ron.
This court for this session stands adjourned.